Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Coming at you live from Auto Trader, here's New Car Energy.
They're searching inventory. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. It's smarter car shopping just for
Find your next ride at autotrader.com, powered by Auto Intelligence.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope you guys are having a good start to your Thursday. Of course, on a Thursday, Danian Hughes joins us. So we'll be joined by Danian here in about an hour, former Chiefs wide receiver. Be good to ask him about a wide receiver room that's going to have everybody back and what that means for Sunday against the Raiders. Also, we'll talk Raider week. We know Danian cannot stand the Raiders and nobody should like the Raiders whatsoever. But as somebody that played against them, I can't wait to talk to Danian about Raider week. We'll also later on in the show talk a little fantasy football. Paul Charchi, and we'll get you set up for a little Thursday night football. Drew's Bengals taking on the Steelers tonight. How does that impact fantasy lineups? And of course, trying to navigate some of these injuries still is very, very tricky right now in the fantasy football world. You guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. Always subscribe. Makes it easy for those of you who have done it. We appreciate it. If you haven't, what are you waiting for? Hit the subscribe button on YouTube. Pops right there at the top. You don't have to anymore type in 965. You don't have to search Cody and Gold or The Drive or Fesco and Dusty. It'll be right there whenever the stream is live, including After Hours, which is streaming live these days as well.
We like reading your text, obviously, over 913-586-7965. Sometimes the chats can be like a text line, but you all get to participate and see what the other people are saying, not just us reiterating what some people are saying over there. So a nice little mix over there. So yeah, we like it when you subscribe over there. Just really, we don't want you to miss the show no matter where you are. The Odyssey app, the streams, listening to it on your car radio, wherever.
And if there's ever any issues with the Odyssey app, just tweet at Drew B. Nix, complain to him. He will get it fixed.
He's going to personally handle it.
Yeah, make sure you do that. Let's start with the wide receivers, though, because it is finally going to happen. We're going to see Worthy, Brown, Rice on the field at the same time. Tyquan Thornton also in the mix to this. Juju Smith-Schuster.
It's deep.
It is a very deep wide receiver room. It is not even up for debate that it's the best wide receiver unit, right, for Patrick Mahomes in his career. Like that shouldn't even be much of an argument.
I was trying to think about it because, you know, it's easy, and we'll talk about false narratives and the disingenuous part of other sports talk with people like Craig Carton later on in the show. So I try not to, Gold, at times, just be hyperbolic for the sake of being hyperbolic, as in it feels like a fairly easy sentence to say, this is the best wide receiver unit Patrick Mahomes has ever had. But I mean, look at it. It of course is. It's not as top heavy. The top heavy one had a probably future Hall of Famer in Tyreek Hill, paired with a definitive future Hall of Famer in Travis Kelce. And still had guys on the roster like Sammy Watkins, who had nice NFL careers, and everything else in between. So it's not like he hasn't had good wide receiver units or other very good wide receiver units. It's fairly obvious that that has been the case. This is the deepest one. This is the best overall one on aggregate score. Again, I don't think it's the most top-heavy one, but tell me the argument outside of it. Unless Rashee Rice is just a shell of a man, and coming off the injury and missing football for a year, he just doesn't look the same. All of the advanced metrics tell you that Rashee Rice was getting ready to explode. You couple that with how many of these guys could be 1,000-yard wide receivers if they were the number one. Xavier Worthy feels like he's a candidate for that. Hollywood Brown has had a 1,000-yard season and was on pace for that based on the way this season was kind of starting. And I'm not saying any of the other guys are outside of there, but they got four guys pacing you know, for between 700 and 900 yards on the team, Gold, and or 950 yards on the team, and that's before Rashee Rice comes back. I think it's his best wide receiver unit. And I honestly, considering the depth, I don't want to say that it's not close, but I think it's probably like 20% better than any wide receiver unit he's had at any one time. Like, I mean, I would put it by like at least a fair size margin at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the wide receiver room, that deep threat, check, Tyquan Thorne, Xavier Worthy maybe applies to that as well. So two of them. What if they had two deep threats at the same time, legitimately? Possession wide receiver with the ability to get yards after the catch at a very high level. That would be Rashee Rice. Check that box off as well. Xavier Worthy, an explosive player, not just in the pass game, as I said, but also an extension of the running game and sometimes in the running game. All right. They have that type of player in this room. They got a veteran that is capable of key third down conversions that they trust. That's the Juju Smith-Schuster type. And then if you have to go beyond that, it doesn't really matter at that point in time, right? But you are deeper 1-4, 1-5 than you've ever been with Patrick Mahomes. And like we were looking earlier before the show of all the wide receivers that played with Patrick Mahomes and who played the most games, and some of them are just kind of funny to look back. The wide receiver that's played the most games with Patrick Mahomes was Mecole Hardman. Played in 70. If these numbers are from Pro Football Reference, I believe they are correct.
I would assume so.
Mecole Hardman, 71. DeMarcus Robinson played 63 games with Patrick Mahomes. And Tyreek Hill, 58. We're not talking tight ends. That's why I'm not mentioning Travis Kelce. But that gives you an idea. The closest current Chief to, you know, at the top of the list would be Juju Smith-Schuster, who's played 35 games with Patrick Mahomes.
I can't. You're trying to tell me Juju Smith-Schuster has played some of the most games with Patrick
Rice
Mahomes?
Rice has only played 20 games because of everything. Same amount as Kadarius Toney.
I mean, it just like when you start going down this road, this is part of the reason I feel this way. Look, in all retrospect, the time he still had with Tyreek Hill was relatively short compared to the time he's been in the NFL. It's just deeper and multifaceted and covers a lot of areas. They can go underneath and deep, and they have possession guys and non-possession guys. It's just across the board, by far, his most talented wide receiver unit. That's why I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see it, like, the plan put together. Because I will admit, this was largely their plan last year. Minus Tyquan Thornton. This was a huge part of what they were planning on doing last year. They had Hollywood under contract, Juju under contract, Rashee Rice under contract. They had drafted Xavier Worthy. This is not some, like, different unit other than Tyquan Thornton, who they did sign last year, but obviously stash with the intent of getting him up and running by this time this year. And so it's largely been their plan, and we've never got to see it executed. For 18 months, we've known this is the Chiefs' plan at wide receiver and never once got to see them actually attempt to do it. So yeah, Sunday's important for me to see if what we think is true.
Yeah.
This is the best wide receiver unit he's had.
Someone says over prime, Kelce, Hill, and Sam. Again, we're not including tight end, so that's why. Kelsey's not part of the conversation of the wide receiver room. I understand he gives you wide receiver production, but we're saying from a wide receiver room, it's the best one Mahomes has had. Yeah, if we expand it beyond tight ends, well then
I still think it might be this team.
Well, if you expand it beyond tight ends, then the Kelce, any combination of Kelce and Hill would be better.
Would it?
Yeah.
Because
Kelce was in his prime at the time. Tyreek Hill was in his prime at the time. So if we expand it beyond just wide receivers, then I think you would have to get, because they had Sammy Watkins, they had prime Kelce, prime Hill, and Watkins at the same time. That'd
be the only one that I think has an argument.
Yes.
Like I don't think that there's some other team that includes Travis Kelce at any point during his peak, because those teams, as you pointed out, yes, prime Tyreek Hill, prime Travis Kelce. So they had 1,479 yards and 1,336.
Yeah. But the third wide receiver
had 519 yards.
Yeah.
So I think even if you included tight end, then it'd be Chris Conley at 330 and D-Rob at 288.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So still think even if you included Kelce because of the depth of this unit, again, how many of these guys, like on that roster, there were three guys who had at some point in their career, at any point in their career, had more than 800 yards. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins. That's it. Chris Conley, D-Rob, all those guys have never surpassed those numbers. On this year's team, how many guys have surpassed that at some point in their career? Travis Kelce, Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice, who did it in his rookie year. Xavier Worthy hasn't, so it's still only three, but a guy who we think could do it outside of the guys we're in there. I think it's on par with those teams because of its depth. Again, the top-heavy part of it's obviously having a different conversation. They've never had this kind of depth. They've never had this kind of unit. And this goes back to, you know, an offensive line, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. We're supposed to have them all together, so I'm excited to see what the wide receivers do together. The biggest downfall is, like, if they had had this wide receiver unit with prime Travis Kelce, well, then they would have been a juggernaut. They would have been an unstoppable monster.
Yeah, and we can keep expanding it out. Now people are bringing in the running back situation. Now, we're not saying that this is going to be the best offense that Mahomes has ever had. We're just specifically talking the wide receiver room. Yeah, if you want to bring up, you know, prime Hill, prime Kelce, prime Kareem Hunt. Yeah, that was historically great.
That was the one.
The wide receiver room 1-4, 1-5 this year is better than any other 1-4, 1-5 they've had in the Mahomes era. And maybe in franchise history, quite honestly.
Ooh, you want to go franchise? You're going to stay. Now we're going to get people talking about, like, the Carlos Carson. Yeah,
I wasn't alive to watch that, but I'm just saying,
like, that's what they're going to bring up.
Yeah.
Anytime we have a wide receiver conversation with the Chiefs, it is a stark reminder that their history of wide receivers is awful. Awful. They have been a franchise. You know, like the Bears we make fun of for being like a bad franchise with quarterbacks, and you're like, look at all these horrible quarterbacks they've had over the years. The Chiefs' list of their top 10 best wide receivers, it ain't great. You're like, Eddie Kennedy, you're like, some of them, you're like, you're still a top 10 wide receiver in this franchise's history? Eddie Kinnison? He only had 2,000-yard seasons in his entire NFL career, and they were both here. And you're like, that's one of your best? Ugh. That goes back a long way. You don't want to, like, start going through the list. And I don't know. I don't know about their history. Probably some. The only one that probably compares is some deeper one in the, like, late 70s, early 80s.
How about this group,
Cody?
Because
any time in the time I've been alive, there's not one that's better.
Henry Marshall, Carlos Carson, and Stephon Page. All of them in their time playing were roughly in the mid 80s, and they all collected at least 6,300 yards.
Yeah, I mean, okay.
Again, I wasn't alive in the 80s, so I don't know.
I mean, that's a nice unit. It might be that one. I don't know who 4 and 5 were. I don't, you know. I can just tell you, in the time I've been alive or Alex has been alive, we watch a lot of different wide receiver units for the Chiefs. There hasn't been one better than this. Not in our lifetime. If we limit it to 1984 and on, this is the best unit a Chiefs starting quarterback has had at wide receiver ever. Like, it just is. And I'm not, again, it's not top heavy. Because then we know we're tossing Tyreek Hill into it, who is one of the 10 best wide receivers of his era.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I'm not saying top heavy. I'm saying 1-5, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. You spread them out and you put 4 wide receivers on the field, they are dangerous. Now, I will say that this is a big reliance on what is Rashee Rice. And this is where, like, I saw really good stats put out from multiple people on his separation stats are good, his yards per route, his yards after contact. All the numbers support that Rashee Rice was and was about to be a top 20 wide receiver in the NFL. If he's not that, this conversation just changed a little bit. I'm banking on the idea that Rashee Rice is somewhere in the top 30 to 35.
Where he was pacing last year before he got hurt?
He was pacing to be a top 5 wide receiver last year. I'm just asking him to be somewhere in the 20 to 30 range in the NFL. If he's anywhere near that.
1,000 yards? Does that put you in top 20? If you get to 1,000, are you a top 20 receiver?
Not anymore. Like, we don't think anymore, do we?
No, we went and looked this up a year or so ago, where how many receivers are 1,000-yard receivers these days. It's way more than it used to be, just passing yardages up across the NFL. I don't know what it is so far, like currently, who is pacing for a 1,000-yard season. But we looked this up after last football season or 2 football seasons ago, and
it's not.
It doesn't automatically. 1,000-yard season is not what it was like 15
Jameson
years ago.
Jameson Williams was 24th, and he got to 1,000. DK was 25th, and he didn't get to 1,000. So if you get to 20, you're a 1,000-yard receiver.
Now, for him, that's not, you know, obviously a 1,000-yard wide receiver is not for the rest of the way. We're talking about a guy who, you know, like 1,000 yards over, 17 games or whatever is a lot different than what we're talking about for him. He doesn't have to get to 1,000. Mm-hmm. That's 58 yards a game, 59 yards a game. That's what we're talking about the rest of the way for him. How many games we got left? 11? They're 3-3?
I think he can
do
it.
616 100%. Yards the rest of the way would be a 1,000-yard season for Rashee Rice. He was on pace for 1,600.
We just don't know. We just don't know what the, you know, how they're going to operate with having all these weapons and what that does for individual production. It's the whole EGE thing, right, that the team has been talking about all week and everything like that. All right, let's get back into the story kind of the day yesterday and something that is ongoing, and that is Josh Simmons. We're not going to get into the specifics again of, you know, how the press conference went yesterday and what we don't know and all that. We're talking strictly from a football end, which is, while we're excited they get a full wide receiver room healthy and back for the first time, you think, oh, they've got their left tackle figured out, They got the offensive line rolling. They got the wide receiver room rolling. And yet now they're going to enter a game on Sunday, and it sure seems like, barring a major shift in some news, they're not going to have their starting left tackle. And yes, Jalen Moore played very, very well, and thank goodness they signed him in the offseason. There's a lot of you that were upset that they were spending all this money on Jalen Moore. He was the original left tackle plan before they drafted Josh Simmons. So they have that luxury. But yet again, it is a bummer that we still are not going to see the actual full-blown starting offense. Now, most teams in the NFL at this point of the season have injuries and things like that, and so it's pretty rare that you're going to go through a whole season and not have guys that are unavailable. This is not unique to Kansas City.
It just feels like we're coming up one spot short in the sense that what you said, we had spent a huge chunk of the time talking about finally the whole complement of the offense is back, and now they're down their starting left tackle for an indeterminate amount of time. And so if you're going to be, and again, I cannot tell you, and I don't think the Chiefs can tell you, you want to know the truth, how long Simmons is going to be out for. And so the fear I have over it is really twofold. One is, it is easy to look good in a four-game stretch, five-game stretch, like Jalen Moore did last year. It's easy to look good in a one-game stretch when you're the guy who is not starting and has been a backup a huge chunk of your career. Can Jalen Moore be a starting left tackle for 11 games if that's called upon? Can he hold up over that time? Can he block at the rate he has done in short spurts in his NFL career? So that's already fear one. The other is, well, now the depth is gone. One Juwan Taylor twisted ankle, one Jalen Moore injury away from, we're back to what we were looking at last year at left tackle, and the entire balance of the offensive line is immediately thrown off. So now we got to be on pins and needles anytime some player looks like they maybe got a little uncomfortable or rolled up on or any of those things, where before Jalen Moore is providing the depth where none of us were fearing if there was a little issue. Like, for instance, when Simmons was a late add to the injury report because of an illness, which I think is related to what's going on now, and I think Nate Taylor mentioned he thinks it's related too. When he was a late add, we're like, well, they got Jalen Moore for today, so we don't have to panic. Now, Gold, if there's any kind of issue like that, we're not necessarily there. It adds kind of a complication to the issue, and we don't get to see the offense at its full complement. With their what looked like emerging star at left tackle in Josh Simmons, now it's going to be like, okay, let's see how Jalen Moore.
I think Jalen Moore can be very good. The ceiling is lower of a guy that was playing at a guy that was trending towards like an all pro type of level, or at least a Pro Bowl type of level in Josh Simmons. Jalen Moore, I think, can be very, very serviceable at left tackle. And with the way that we're going to talk about Kingsley in a little bit, the way that Kingsley is now coming along at left guard, that probably can make it work, right? You can probably make that work versus maybe in week one when Kingsley was still trying to figure out playing guard. Maybe it would be more problematic than what it is right this second, where I think Kingsley every single week has started to look better and better and more comfortable left guard. You mentioned Nate Taylor. He was on with Fesco and Dusty today and was talking about the situation at hand at left tackle.
I guess I'll share this. You know, Josh Simmons was listed as questionable with an illness before they played Jacksonville. I think that has to relate to his absence this past Sunday and ongoing. These things are related. And so I don't know how the Chiefs necessarily handled it hours before he played the Jacksonville Jaguars. And again, Josh Simmons performed amazing considering that this, what he's dealing with now, could be in relation to what happened in terms of the team saying like, okay, well, he's questionable because he's dealing with an illness, which again, if you are, you know, educated, that might infer you as to what might be going on. Again, I don't have all the details, but I was explained, or I was sort of told yesterday, that his blip on the injury report hours before kickoff in the stadium in Jacksonville is related to what he's dealing with now.
I mean, it's obviously going to continue to be a story to follow, and I you know, we talked about this yesterday, and I'm not trying to know what it is he's personally dealing with, but we got to talk about as it relates to the offensive line now. Because it does relate, and they are related now, that there's a chance they're going to be without their starting left tackle for a long period of time, or even a longer period of time than any of us want to admit at this point. And so there's a chance that Jalen Moore is the starter the rest of the year or a huge chunk of the year, and it adds an extra pressure to the offense that I wanted to see at full capacity. And at least for the interim goal, we're not going to see at full capacity, because you and I both know that at the rate Simmons was playing, which was an incredibly high level,
he's playing great,
they are not likely to get that level of play out of Jalen Moore. Not saying he can't be, like you said, a good player, a solid left tackle, a league average left tackle even, the kind of things we were asking for out of Simmons going into the year. he had just exceeded that level in the early portion of the season. And so it's got to be, you know, like, we got to see what he continues to do after that, now that we're in there. And Jalen Moore's going to be one of those players. Remember in the first couple of games, Golden, we're like, let's watch Kingsley. Let's watch Simmons. Let's see what they got. And we're paying attention for these next few weeks. I'm going to be watching what Moore does. I'm going to see how the offensive line holds up. I'm going to see how it affects the offense in general. You know,
the Raiders overall may not be a good football team, but Max Crosby's
he's a good player.
Is going to be a really good test again. Now they move him around. It's not just going to be Max Crosby on Jalen Moore. Max Crosby, I'm sure they'll move him around and he'll be matched up with Juwan Taylor. And like, the Chiefs have faced Max Crosby, I don't know, probably at this point it feels like 8 times. I don't know if it's actually that, but it feels like they faced him that many times at least in his career. And so I think they'll have something planned to try to handle that. Hopefully they don't have to leave anybody to help. It's been nice the last couple of weeks. We haven't had discussions of, for the most part, of them having to give extra help to a side. Now, they got caught at one point against the Lions where, for whatever reason, Noah Gray was matched up against trying to block Aiden Hutchinson. You know, that stuff can happen occasionally as well. But for the most part, they haven't really had to help out Juwan Taylor. They didn't have to help out Josh Simmons. Hopefully they don't have to dedicate any personnel to help out Jalen Moore.
Yeah, that he can be on an island when the moment calls for it, because they want to be in pass sets. They want to spread teams out wide. They want to confuse him and force him to cover the variety of talent we just talked about on the offensive line. I will say the one bright spot on this, all of this as it relates to the offensive line, is at least at the moment, it seems like they're pretty good at left guard. Kingsley Suamataia has allowed all of one pressure in the last 3 games combined. And so his turnaround is going to be studied for a while. And why so much view the second year is this big swing year. Second and third year, I use these big swing years for players where I start making bigger judgments. I don't make huge judgments based on the rookie year. I start following the progression in year two and year three. We talk about this with quarterback, all kinds of different positions. Kingsley, a player who looked like he was dead to rights, lost, had lost his job, and had no reason to be on an offensive line last year, is playing really, really, really good, quietly, left guard. And if they found something there, okay, we're back. We're back. This is a big year for Kingsley, and at the moment, he seems to have settled in nicely.
You mentioned the last 3 games. Yeah, and the exact stat, one pressure at 130 pass-blocking snaps. One of them. And this is where, you know, you find out Kingsley is playing a lot better. Also, having Josh Simmons to his left, did that help things out? Now he has Jalen Moore. What does that do to the left side of the offensive line? But Kingsley has been a huge plus here in 2025, learning a brand new position. Yeah, the initial plan failed of him being the long-term answer at left tackle. They quickly pivoted to guard, and it looks like he's found a home at left guard and hopefully will be the left guard of this team for a couple of years moving forward.
Again, it doesn't mean he has to get a long-term contract at the end of it. But if for the next 3 years you found a starting left guard for you, then I don't, is it a home run second round pick? No. Is it a bust of a second round pick? No. And not knowing where they are with some of the others, even the Simmons stuff, you need some reliable players who are cheap on the offensive line. Creed Humphrey is the highest paid at his position. Juwan Taylor is the highest paid right tackle. They have the highest paid right guard, and they spent a first round pick at left tackle. You kind of needed Kingsley to work in a weird way, Gold, because otherwise you were right back to having to spend what I consider a premium pick somewhere in the first 3 rounds on guard next year. And if you just bought yourself 2 more years after this of not having to worry about left guard, cool. Now you buy yourselves time. Now you can take the Trey Smith. You can take flyer picks in the 5th, 6th and see if you can slow develop his eventual replacement. And even if you need to do that, you can always talk extension or all that stuff down the road. Mm-hmm. I've been really impressed. And we talk about this all the time. I think we are fair to criticize players when it is done, when they are rightfully to be criticized. Like we talked about Juwan Taylor. We crushed Kingsley for how bad of a job he did last year. He is doing a really good job. He deserves some praise for fixing parts of his game or, I don't know, being in a more natural position for him, if that's what it is. Maybe guard was just a better fit from the beginning. Guards, and we talked about this too, guards are
failed tackles all the time.
Yeah. But we didn't talk about Kingsley this way in the offseason. And you and I spent some time being like, hey, this can work. Just because he was a bad tackle doesn't mean he can't be a good guard. There were 3 players in the first round this year they were talking about who played tackle in college who might end up as a guard.
Yeah, try to salvage the pick a little bit here that you spent on Kingsley a year ago. But he's been a nice bright spot on the offensive line. All right, up next, they're still complaining and whining in Detroit. The latest on that.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching inventory.
Oh, yeah.
They find what you need.
They're going to find
it. You can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing's precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
Skip the gym, not the workout. With Hydro, you get a full body workout in just 20 minutes, hitting 86% of your muscles in one smooth, low impact motion. And now there's a new Hydro Arc, Hydro's most advanced rower yet. Arc introduces Hydro Metrics, tracking your power, endurance, and precision every time you row, so you can actually see your progress. Go to Hydro.com and use code FIT to get $100 off any Hydro rower, including Arc. That's HYDROW.com, code FIT.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At next. Just getting started here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. 30 minutes from now, Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, will join us. We will talk about a wide receiver that's been back for a couple weeks that is putting up some big-time numbers, at least per target, or at least per touch in this offense. We'll get there in a bit. I'm sure you noticed, it, and this was on Wednesday, now it's Thursday, so maybe it'll cool off a little bit today. But how much Detroit is still talking about what happened on Sunday
Night
Football. And what renewed that was Lions head coach Dan Campbell at his media availability earlier in the week. I think yesterday morning it was. He said that going back to the legal shift or whatever formation, Jared Goff, right? He did not set himself before he caught the touchdown pass. We all know it got reversed. There was a delay. Then the officials on the field threw a flag. Lions settled for a field goal. Dan Campbell said he was told the penalty call that wiped out that trick play touchdown came from New York. Well, after the game and the pool report, the referee, Craig Rolstad, said otherwise. So that is sparked like, oh, it's proof.
Conspiracy.
See, it's proof that the league is conspiring to help the Chiefs. And so that has caused this to blow up even more. And we'll get to something during the Chiefs Red half hour. You've got, you know, Detroit Sports Talk Radio arguing about Mahomes not getting taunting penalties. Look, the Detroit Lions are going to be just fine, I think, because it's more of a fan thing. I don't think Dan Campbell's complaining as much as he was answering the question, but their fan base, you would have thought this was their Super Bowl and their season is over. I'm a little surprised that 4 or 5 days later, they're still arguing about that call and that being the reason why they lost the game, apparently. They lost 30-17.
I got to say, this probably, and this is not meant to be an entire indictment, but part of this issue is, in my opinion, is a fan base that is not used to winning trying to take it out in one game. I can give you the 4 points if you want them. You still lose. By six, I can give you a full-ass touchdown if it makes you feel better. Like, it was the first possession of the game in the first quarter. So first off, I actually don't think this should be a rallying cry for a number of reasons, largely because the game was dominated by Kansas City. And you've chosen one play in the first quarter that was the correct call to hang your hat on. And I saw people tweet it out, which I thought was really interesting, because Dungy talked about it going back to the booth after the game when they went to halftime, and he seemed to know the call really well. He's like, yeah, if you go under center, it's not there. Somebody found an old clip of Peyton Manning doing the exact same thing and it getting flagged against the New England Patriots, Gold, where it wasn't on the goal line, but they had Peyton Manning roll out and immediately got flagged. And you're like, why did Tony Dungy know that? He had a call against him when he tried to do it with Peyton Manning 20 years ago. It is an illegal play. They practiced it wrong. This is one that's on Dan Campbell. You should be mad at Campbell for not understanding the rule and Goff for not understanding the rule that you don't have to put your hands under center. If you approach center like you are the quarterback, you have signified you are and then have to do it. So, like, why are you so what deep state conspiracy are they doing in the first drive of the game?
Because people want to believe that it's all rigged for the Chiefs. And so it ended up being the correct call. I think it is a little weird that somebody is either misspeaking or something, right?
Like, it's weird that there are two sides of the story, right?
I will admit that, the referee after the game said it did not come from there, Dan Campbell claims he was told. Somebody's either lying or misspoke.
And I'll be honest, I lean towards the referees lying for obvious reasons. They're always trying to CYA.
So because of that, people are saying, well, that is proof, though, that the league is intentionally changing calls for the Chiefs. That's the narrative that's out there. And we can get into the bad look stuff and all that. And if that happened, then in terms of the league or New York, I should say, calling down and prompting the officials to throw a flag. Yeah, that can't happen. That's something that shouldn't happen in any football game. We're in agreement there. But this idea that this is now proof that the league is intentionally changing calls on a regular basis for the Chiefs, all that is people are looking for anything. And today's day and age, if somebody has a conspiracy, any sense that maybe there's like an ounce of something weird going on, they think they've been proven correct.
And that, I will say, the failure of communication either, and this is like sometimes where the league could help itself. The ref is saying one thing, Dan Campbell saying the other. But Dan Campbell is giving it secondhand. He's saying, the league told me this. And the refs are saying, I didn't do that. Yeah. Like, give me a direct leak. Did he talk to New York or not?
Right.
Because they do review every scoring play, but they are not supposed to put flags on the field.
Yes.
So it is a mistake. And I'll admit, it is a mistake by the league if they allowed the league office to make that call for Kansas City. And admittedly, I don't think Detroit should be all that upset seeing how it is a penalty and was a penalty. And you got your ass kicked the rest of the game. Which I think
This wasn't a 2-point win or a 3-point win. And look, it was a huge swing. It was a massive swing. And sure. Momentum in everything. It looked, the Lions marched right down the field, and it was kind of an FU touchdown pass to Jared Goff as well. And so it was a massive swing in the game. But the way the rest of the game went, acting as if the Chiefs would have lost the game if that was a touchdown, is very, very optimistic thinking on the Lions side of things.
I will say it is very much. I don't think I was prepared for it because the Chiefs had started slow and they were losing some football games and they had one of their most penalized games ever the week before. I didn't.
Yeah, nobody brings that up that they had 13 penalties the week before. Did they tick off the league office that week and so they screwed them over that week? Yeah. Is that what happened?
Didn't return a call or something.
Yeah.
Didn't bribe them the right way. Part of me is like, and that's not even to say that I think the league was against them that week. They committed most of those penalties.
Sure.
They were very guilty of it. It was a very sloppy football game by the Chiefs. They deserved to lose that game against the Jags. But so it's like, when I view it, I guess what I can't understand, like, I wasn't expecting it to be this big of a story again. Like, it's all some deep state conspiracy. And then we just go, like, and I think Scott Kaxmar, who's clearly a Chiefs supporter, admittedly, I'll say.
He's always tweeting out different stats and, you know, to usually make Mahomes look good against the Brady argument.
So, for whatever, and look, I don't know if he grew up a Chiefs fan to hell. I don't know. He lives in Pittsburgh currently, according to his social media. So whatever it's worth. But I'll admit, most of his stuff slants Kansas City. But I think he did a great job of putting out what I think is the straw man argument that is currently going on with Chiefs in officiating. If you look at it from EPA per play this year, Patrick Mahomes is 18th in the NFL in receiving beneficial calls from the referees, as in ones that add yardage or continue drives or continue scoring drives. He's 18th. Josh Allen is one. I'm not saying Josh Allen gets some disproportionately favorable calls, but that's pointed out. And then eventually what his mentions turned into were, well, it's the calls that don't get called. So a disprovable, like unprovable thing.
Yeah, it's moving the goalposts.
And that's the problem. Inevitably is what happens with these opposing fan bases is they turn it into an argument that nobody can prove one way or the other, which is it's the calls you don't see and the one that they don't call against Mahomes, and it turns into this web. And you're like, okay, well, it's then you just don't want to have a conversation.
Because you can't look, this is a non-sports thing too. You just can't reason with some people that if they believe a conspiracy, they want to believe it so badly. There's nothing you can tell them that's going to convince them otherwise, and you're wasting your time. That is a non-sports take as well. You're just wasting your time. There's some things that you're never going to convince somebody. They're going to always think that this happened, even if it didn't happen. And even if there's plenty of proof that it didn't happen, they will come up with some new reasoning and logic.
Until it's just like a thing that nobody can prove. Yeah. And you're like, well, I'm right then. I'm like, but you can't prove your point.
Yeah, like the sky's red. And you're like, Gold, no, it's not. And here's like, no, it's red. It's definitely red. And I refuse to ever, even though it's right there in front of me, and nobody is willing to admit that, no, that there's some conspiracy theories that can be squashed very quickly. But nowadays, we allow these theories, sports or non-sports, to exist everywhere.
And so. I we don't need to nitpick every single call in the sense that we've talked about this with umpiring too and refereeing. We all have to accept that they're going to get some wrong and do get some wrong. It happens all the time. I mean, constantly. Hell, I'm not even sure if the ball Travis Kelce caught in that game was a catch.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. Yep.
But that's in real time. They
Dan Campbell did not challenge it. The Chiefs rushed it. What people leave out in that circuit, again, context matters. Everybody just talks about
the
clip,
and
they say, how come the league didn't overturn that? The Chiefs rushed to the line of scrimmage. Dan Campbell did not challenge it in time. That's the whole point of rushing to the line of scrimmage. We're acting like the Chiefs are the first team that ever thought that maybe their player didn't catch it, so they quickly got to the line of scrimmage, and they snapped it before anybody could review it. It happens multiple times a week in the NFL.
They have systems in place in order to get the calls right. And I'm sure we all do now. Remember a play where Tyreek Hill caught a touchdown. It bounced off his leg, went into his hands, and it was a touchdown. It was called a dropped ball. Andy didn't challenge it. And then when we watched the review, we're like, Andy, what are you doing, my guy? That was a touchdown. Tyreek caught that. It happens. Refs are not going to make perfect calls.
Oh, bad officiating happens every week.
Bad officiating is going to happen all the time. They're going to call holds that aren't holds. They're going to call non-holds that aren't holds. They're going to call these happen all the time. And we can't. And this show's been pretty consistent on this. I'm not going to say that calls don't impact games, but I'm also not going to say a single call is the reason why teams lose games, right? Like it's a balance. It had an impact on the flow of the game.
Sure.
The Jared Goff call. It did. But the rest of the game was very one-sided in who played better football. So now we're going to get hung up on the first one play on the first drive of the game. Just move on.
It's low hanging fruit for everybody. That's all it is. They were quiet when the team was 0-2. Now the Chiefs are a threat again. And so I'm sure Sunday at noon when the Chiefs play the Raiders, they may, just like every officiating crew seemingly does every game, there will be a missed call. And there'll be a missed call in the Colts-Chargers game, and nobody will say a word about it. There'll be a missed call in the Chiefs-Raiders game, and it'll be the end of the world. And that's where we're at. Poor officiating exists every single week in every single game. But only one team's calls that are poorly officiated get discussed. And it's the Kansas City Chiefs. All right.
Well, except for now the touch push is getting a little bit of juice.
Fair. Fair. Let's talk about Xavier Worthy, because since he's returned in week four, not only has it opened up this offense, but he's got 17 touches. Remember, he sometimes runs the ball as well. 17 touches, 198 scrimmage yards, and a touchdown. He's averaging 11.6 yards per touch. So as much as it's been more about, getting him back allows Travis Kelce to work more. It allows the running game to be more successful. When he touches the ball, the reason why it works is because teams are fearful of him and they have to make sure they have him accounted for. He's been a massive weapon every time he touches the football. To have 11.5, a little over 11.5 yards per touch, that'll get it done every single time. He's been really, really good since he's been back from the dislocated shoulder.
And he's pretty much averaging that across the board, run or pass. It's not like he's averaging 20 yards a catch and 5 yards per run. He's averaging 10.6 yards per run, 11.2 yards per catch on the season. Obviously, it's been better since he came back. He's played in four games, but let's admit that it's three, right? Can we agree? It's three games.
Fair.
He played a snap or whatever it was.
Yeah, third play of the game.
Three snaps.
In week one.
So when we start dividing it up and we're saying, what is he getting per game? We're talking about a player who for a 16-game season is on pace for like 1,100 scrimmage yards between rushing and receiving. This goes back to the same thing and the problem they had last year. And the problems they had for the first two games, Golden, why I think they're going to end up being the best offensive football when Rice comes back. Explosive players make explosive plays. NFL teams say these kind of things sometimes for fairly obvious reasons, because it's true. And the fact that he was getting 11 yards per game, you know what that meant, Gold? People had to play deeper on the Chiefs. People had to give them more space. People had to pay attention to him instead of other players. A million reasons why. But the fact that he is an 1,120-yard scrimmage average player for the three games he's been fully healthy this year tells you all you need to know about the instant impact he has had in the game. And honestly, he's their most dynamic runner. We had asked, and this is probably the important part, we had asked the entire offseason for them to get some explosiveness in the run game. Hey, man, go get an explosive back. Give yourselves a chance. You know, maybe those 20-yard runs, those would be cool. Let's give yourself a chance to get those. Obviously, they don't have the back for that. They do have the wide receiver. Seems fairly obvious that they can give him the ball every once in a while and just do it that way, Gold. He's averaging 10 yards a carry on 5 carries. He averaged only 5 yards a carry last year on 20 carries. So, like, he's already more explosive than that, and I think some of that's the offensive line, going back to the initial topic at the beginning of the show.
It is, and I know there's some worry about workload for him. You know, he's got the shoulder thing's going to be a thing all year. He's dealing with an ankle injury. You know, it's one of those things.
They can taper that down now that Rice is back.
They can, and we'll ask Danen about this in 15 minutes. They can, but also, like, it's the NFL. It's as physical of a sport as there is out there. I don't know if you can play the game all year and say we're just going to try to protect him for the postseason. I think he's going to play with how they need him to play. And does it mean that he has to be out there as many snaps as he was prior to the Rice injury? Maybe not. But like, if they think he's an explosive playmaker that can help the offense, they're not going to suddenly just not call, you know, jet sweeps with him because they're fearful of him getting hurt.
Typically in the NFL, if you're healthy, in Andy Reid's
you're gonna
team
play.
Anyway, if you're healthy enough to play, you're healthy enough to play the normal amount you play. Like, he treats it as you practiced, you're playing, we're not babying you through this. You're either going to stay healthy for this game or not. Maybe it risks injury,
Look,
but for the
games,
most part, they've been a relatively healthy team.
They have, knock on wood, and they got three games till the bye week. Bye week's going to come at a really nice time. If they can get through these three games, not only with a couple wins, but similar health path, they'll be in the best shape in terms of just roster-wise post-bye week in years. And I'm saying that, and they won 15 games last year. But they really will, because they, of course, had the early bye week the last couple years and the weird scheduling towards the end of the year, and they dealt with injuries. They're getting healthier, and I understand we don't know what's the whole left tackle situation, but they're getting healthier, and they have the Raiders, Commanders, Bills, then they get a beautiful bye week there, week 10, I think it is.
Right before they go to Denver, an important game on their schedule. So the bye week's coming at a really good time. I think what I like most about the Worthy stats, and the ones you're pointing out, 17 touches, 198 yards, what we just mentioned. He's on pace for 1,100 scrimmage yards. If he just, for those three games that he's played, he did that over the course of a 17-game schedule. Obviously, he's not going to play 17 games. He's already missed some time. But that's what he would be pacing for, is that the original comp I gave for this, and we talked about on this show, going back to last year when they only had Xavier Worthy, is we are getting way closer to this being an A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith situation, in that they have two dynamic pass catching weapons to go with everyone.
Except
else.
They'll actually get the ball to their wide receiver.
Wait, did you see already that there's a story out of there that he's like, they're viewing it like that slide they had in Philly before they just like fell off the planet, lost early in the playoffs, and now they're already starting to try to blame AJ Brown. And this goes back to the Sirianni thing. And I know he won the Super Bowl last year. He's gonna get a lot, like, he's gotta get some order in his house sometimes. It seems like they're always blaming other people or other players, and not the man in charge. And it seems like there's always a lot of like infighting in that organization, despite the fact, and this is why I still think they win a lot, is they have, on paper, like they do every year, one of the most talented rosters in the NFL, offense and defense. And so they're just kind of like a funky team. I like following the other team, the other stuff in the league sometimes, just from an entertainment standpoint. You and I were talking about the lines for the upcoming weekend, and you're already talking about making bets on bad football teams. And we're like, well, you know, let's get ourselves into
it. I think the Jets are getting their first one of the year. Yeah.
So the sicko end I'm going to end up being on for the three that we do for Circa Millions is, I can already tell myself, I'm going to end up choosing somebody on the Dolphins Browns. And did you see the weather forecast for that game?
The Dolphins Browns. Is it in Cleveland?
It's in Cleveland. Did you see the current weather forecast? Current weather forecast calls for 95% chance of rain and 40 mile per hour wind gusts.
The wind is the bigger issue than the rain.
Of course it is. Yeah, I mean, they said it could be gust up to 50. They said 40 mile an hour per winds most of the game. 50 to 60 mile per hour
so
gusts.
So Quinshon Judkins.
Tua and Dylan Gabriel trying to throw in 60 mile per hour gusts.
Yeah, that's gross. That's gross.
That game's going to be 10.
And hold on. And you want to bet. Hold on. Like, here's the thing. Like, it's one thing for me to bet on the Jets to beat the Panthers. You want to bet on a game that you're acknowledging is going to have weather play a massive role. That seems like a terrible strategy.
Yep. I think that that's the kind of game where defense thrives. I'm a big Cleveland Browns guy that game.
So you're taking Cleveland. The Browns plus what? What's the line you said?
I got to pull it back up now. I don't have it right in front of me.
Hmm.
You know, no good?
No, look, we'll get the official lines out. Circa puts out their contest lines at noon today. It's different than the lines that are already available right now, and we'll see. I already know that I'm submitting L.A. Chargers.
Okay. Oh, I was about to say, which
minus
L.A.?
Minus 1.5 is probably what the line will be. I'm going to submit the Chargers to beat the Colts, and I'm going to submit, and nobody's going to like it, the Jets plus 1.5 against the Carolina Panthers. Those will be two of my picks.
Sometimes that's the thing about wagering is that you get yourself in some real sicko.
Nobody's going to want to go with my game. It takes consensus for us to submit. And I know nobody's going to like either of my two picks, but
you're putting them in.
I'm putting
them in. The picks you like.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Colts are going to not win 16 games. So at some point, I think a quality team will beat them. The Chargers are at least a quality team. They obviously have some issues on their roster, but they are a quality team. Obviously, I'm rooting for the Colts in that game. I want the Chiefs to get in lead of the division first before I start worrying about the Colts record. And of all the teams to get the number one seed that wouldn't be the Chiefs, the Colts are still probably near the top of the teams that I would prefer to get it.
Other than prior playoff history against the Colts, but you got Patrick Mahomes now. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, that got erased a long time ago. Just their general playoff history, all the other stuff, that got erased a long time ago when Patrick Mahomes came
in. I agree.
So, like, whatever happened against the Colts before, I just don't care anymore. Meanwhile, on the baseball side, obviously last night's game sucked. It was a blowout.
14-3
Blue Jays absolutely hammered him. Kyle Riley hit some garbage time home run that didn't matter. And so, like, that was just kind of a blowout, and it is what it is. But you and I had a conversation last year. Now Jeff Passan is starting to echo some of the sentiments because the story in baseball is still they're anticipating a lockout. I think it's a huge mistake. I think baseball's got to do anything they can to avoid it. But in talking this week in interviews, he had specifically cited this Dodgers-Brewers series as a possible point of emphasis in the conversations of getting ready to take place. So simply put, are we still rooting for the Dodgers to win so that they ruin baseball and we can eventually get a fix? Because if the Dodgers and the big market teams dominate the league in such a way that makes it so unignorable that the players actually want some balance in this league, we might get it. You kind of should be rooting for the Dodgers, as sick as that is.
So, yeah, I mean, Jeff Passan basically said why his article is why Milwaukee and LA is a proxy for the game's greater labor battle that's on the way. You got a smaller market team and, of course, the big bad LA Dodgers. I know people on the surface will say, why would you want to root for the Dodgers? You and I for 2 years now have said if the Dodgers win like 5 years in a row, will it prompt
change?
Now, I don't know if it will, but I think it's the only hope we have of there ever being some sort of balance, whether it is talking salary ceiling, salary floor, both. I think, by the way, the answer is both. I don't think you can have one without the other. You won't get the owners on board with one. You won't get the players on board with the other. So I think that's the only true solution.
Issue. This would be their fourth out of the last 8 years, by the way, if the Dodgers win.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's already happening. It's already trending. Now, deep down, do I want the Dodgers to win? No. I just think it's the only chance that maybe you'll finally get some real pushback. But I'm not counting on it. And I think we're all expecting in 2027 there to be, at minimum, a shortened season. I'm not saying they're going to miss baseball all year in 2027. But I think that we are definitely headed towards a end of March when opening day happens these days. Now they're not being baseball in 2027. Again, that's not till another year. Next year's fine. It's the year after.
Like, some of it is just so obvious. Like, I actually saw our guy Vinny yesterday on First Things First talking a little bit about the Dodgers. Made a Chiefs comparison, by the way.
I like it.
They're essentially just wasting their time in the regular season for the playoffs to start when they can actually take this stuff serious. They don't care what the rotation looks like in March, June, July. They just go through the motions because they're so damn talented. It doesn't matter. Look at their roster. I mean, seriously, look at their roster compared to what the other teams in Major League Baseball get to roll out. Like, their worst hitters are some of the best in any other lineup across the board. They can afford anything. They have Mookie and Shohei and Freddie Freeman and Max Muncy and a million other guys who get on base at whatever, a 400 clip across the board, and it's just insane. And that doesn't even count until you start getting to the pitching.
Because if the Brewers
see what they can do there, it's nuts.
If the Brewers win the series against the World Series, then people say, "Well, see, it's fine.
It's fine. Come on, the Diamondbacks won a year ago or 2 years or whatever it was.
Or they didn't win.
Or they
got
lost.
There. They were against Texas, which spent a ton of money. Deep down, I would love us to see a Mariners Milwaukee Brewers series. That would be fun, but.
It hurts baseball in the long run.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it does.
Versus the Blue Jays, who spend some of the fifth most amount of money in the league, versus the Dodgers, who spend the most amount of money in the league. Well, then we're right back to the same thing, and then it's pay for play. It is who has a $300 million payroll? Congratulations on winning the World Series. And everyone else is just trying to get to the playoffs and compete. I will point out many times, and I have in other media markets, everyone realizes, right, that the Kansas City Royals are one of the very few small market teams in baseball history, especially since, let's say, the initial lockout, since like the 90s, to win a World Series in a small market.
Yeah, what they did in 14 and 15 is
borderline remarkable.
Yeah.
A miracle.
Yeah, it's extremely challenging to do in the baseball climate. And that's why the Royals are trying to, you know, be a winning organization. And when we say that, I think we on one of our videos that we put out a few weeks ago, I think Drew, part of the caption was something about winning seasons, and a few people respond. So what do you mean they're having, what do you mean they're winning? In baseball, yeah, the ultimate goal, of course, is to win a world championship. Duh. But in a small market, and frankly, in any market other than maybe LA, if you make the playoffs, if you are above 500, you know, 3 out of 5 years or even better than that, if 4 out of 6 or something, that's incredible. It really is. And I know that seems like...
It sucks because it's a weird sport to say where...
And I've told you, like, next year, if the Royals are just an 82-win team, I will be upset. Like, I think they have a roster and an organization set up where, like, they need to get back to the postseason next year.
It's very much Premier League-ish. But, and, hey, we finished 7th in the table and we're a small team. This is a big win for us.
Yeah,
you
when
know?
You're super happy when you're Leeds or whoever, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like, ooh, we did it.
I think that's the boss's team, Leeds,
these are,
right?
Oh, is it? Here are or Leicester City, when that was the big underdog.
That was the craziest thing. Like,
but was, so, yeah. When you look at it, I mean, here are the markets for the last, I don't know, 10 years. Who have won the World Series? Los Angeles, Dallas, Houston, Atlanta, Los Angeles, Washington, Boston, Houston. I mean, come on.
Say Boston again there. It seemed like you worked in a...
Yeah, an accent.
Uh-huh.
Boston.
Yeah.
When you... I mean, let's not go through it. The small market teams who have won are the Royals, maybe if you include the Cardinals, who were operating like a big team, maybe because they're a bigger market than Kansas City, but they're not Boston. Miami... They're not a small market. They just operate that way.
Yeah.
Like they won one in 2003 and 95. So if you want to include them, maybe. Other than that, it's just major markets. It's just massive, massive, massive budget-filled markets. So like in a weird way, it's like for the better part of the sport, you almost just need the Dodgers to ruin it.
Let's get back into the Chiefs with Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. He, of course, is on the Chiefs radio network. He also has Players Only tonight. 6 o'clock. We'll ask him about Rashee Rice's return, what it means for Xavier Worthy, and his perspective on the Josh Simmons situation next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You're tuned into Auto Intelligence, live from Auto Trader, where data, tools, and your preferences sync to make your car shopping smooth.
They're searching in vain.
inventory. Oh, yeah. They find what you need. They're going to find
it.
They can make a budget for your wallet to help you succeed. Pricing is precise and true.
So true.
It's smarter car shopping.
Ooh.
Just for you.
Oh, it's just for you.
Ooh.
Find your next ride at autotrader.com. Powered by Auto Intelligence.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speed Test. So MLB fans are connected from home to home plate. With the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever, you can keep up with your teams on the road, overseas, and even off the grid. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data, 1H 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.